Okay. Our boss has caught
my boss here. My boss.
And he's been literally standing there for 30 seconds.
Well,
he's
good thing our boss bought the bleep button in the back control room to do that. All right?
There you have no button. Kristen has to put that in herself. But.
Sorry, Kristen.
Oh, baby, that's right. The boss isn't going to disturb us. He can't affect our English language. He can't affect my swearing, that's for sure.
I'll be honest with you. Yeah. You were a trailblazer here at NBC Sports.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't think we're dropping F-bombs before you got here.
I think you're right. They wanted a digital presence, and I guess they figured, okay, maybe we'll get this guy, and we might have to bend the rules a little bit.
I guess this is what the kids do. They just drop F-bombs on the internet?
The 41-year-old fathers who are assholes. Yeah, I guess this is what they do. What's up, everybody? Chris Sims unbuttoned. That's right. We got week 4 in the books. Ahmed Farid's here. You the man. He wore his special red pants for us today. Mm-hmm. Isn't that neat?
Yep.
You doing good? What's up?
Well, you know why? I had to wear them. Big day.
Big day.
It was the day after Adele sang about Brady returning to Foxborough.
Yeah, and you're wearing your red for the Bucks.
Wearing red for the Bucks.
Right.
Big time victory.
Yep.
Didn't cover the spread. I heard, what was it, like 90% or 98% of money was coming in on the Bucks to cover the,
I think that's what I heard,
six and a half, 7-point spread.
Not shocking. I mean, I guess the spread is a little much. I would have not taken that spread. I can't remember what I picked on the podcast. I think I picked like a Bucks 3 or 4 point win on the podcast on Thursday. But come on, you knew like Belichick and company were going to have a proper game plan. You know, the emotions of that game, it was really cool. I mean, it really was. It was a great Sunday altogether. I mean, we got a lot of different stuff to unpack. I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Well, we will start with that game. And I think, who knows, they might have covered if it wasn't so rainy. And I don't know if you saw during the pregame show, we all had umbrellas there. Hold on. And if it ever rains here in studio, Chris, I want you to know, a la Rodney Harrison, you will not have to hold your own umbrella.
Okay,
I will hold
great.
It for you.
Why don't you just stand up and hold it for me now then? I mean, why not?
The light, because we do have light for you today. I'll shade the light on your face.
Wait, like seriously though? Like, were you watching that when that was going on?
I was. I saw it.
I mean, what a diva. A New England tough guy safety, okay, who... One likes to get on his tippy toes in all pictures because he apparently does not feel like he's tall enough, right?
Okay.
I mean, he's 6 foot.
Where is he?
I don't know. Maybe he's 5'11 and a half.
Yeah.
So he does that. And then, yes, to see him out there with Tirico, Drew Brees,
Holding
their own umbrellas.
Yeah.
Workmanlike effort from them. Uh-huh. I mean, just disappointing from a hard-hitting ex-safety.
Rodney feels like at a certain point, you get to a certain level in life where you're done holding your own umbrella. You don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. You're right. I mean, he's at that level of life. When we have Zoom calls and stuff and I see the background of his house, that's probably what he – probably has a full-time umbrella holder. Probably full-time because, I mean, he's got gold-plated walls and everything, and I always have fun with him because I'm like, oh, what room are you in today? Whoa, that's pretty awesome.
That's one of the coolest things about reaching a level of superstardom is that you go, wow, I never have to hold my own umbrella anymore. How cool is this?
Those days are
behind me.
It was a great pregame.
It was great.
Really cool atmosphere to see. It really was.
All right, so we're going to go through every game. That's our promise to you.
That's what we do.
The homie out there.
Yep.
And we'll start with the big one, the hyped game. Some would say overhyped by us here at NBC, but it was a huge game.
Yep.
Buccaneers defeat the Patriots 19-17. What do you think? Did the game live up to the hype?
Well, I think it like lacked big plays or maybe sexy moments,
sure.
But I do think for the most part, though, the game did live up to the hype. It was close. It was, you know, Brady with the ball in his hand late down against Belichick's famed defense, right? And I think it was a chess match throughout the night. I mean, come on. Brady was barely 50%.
Yep.
That just tells you what kind of night it was. They made him uncomfortable. You know, so I do think the game lived up to the hype. I mean, yeah, a few splash highlight plays. Okay, yeah, you'd like that and like that kind of big-time game. But, like, what did you think? Did you think it was hype enough? Did you live up to it?
I thought the game early on lacked the significance of what does it matter. A little bit.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like it was a spectacle.
Right.
Right? But it's like, all right, if the Bucks lose... Good win for the Patriots. Doesn't ruin the Bucs season. If the Patriots lose, they're kind of supposed to lose. It doesn't change what I think about the Patriots.
Yeah,
so early on, it kind of lacked the significance. But as the game was going and it was close late, I was like, oh, this is getting interesting now to see how it's gonna all play out. And I think a lot of people were looking at, obviously, the quarterback comparison. You got the GOAT there, the former Patriots quarterback versus the guy that's trying to take over, Mac Jones. And so if you're watching on YouTube, here's the comparison. You see the the numbers there, yeah, you're right. Barely over 50% for Tom Brady. On the other hand, Mac Jones, just 9 incompletions the whole game. He tied Brady's record for most completions in a row for a
19,
Patriot with
right?
19 in
yeah,
a row.
Right.
So that was pretty incredible. In a rainy game.
Yes.
You know, not many deep throws, if any.
No.
But I don't know if they could, because the running game really wasn't where they weren't stretching that defense.
No.
And so they took what they could. And I thought Mac Jones played really well.
I think he played about as good as you can play for that situation against that defense. And, yeah, like you said, being one-sided where you're just like, well, I mean, yeah, they might run some play action, but they're not really running the ball. They're going to have a hard time. That's the thing that Tampa does to you. I mean, we've seen, you know, Tampa do that to the Dallas Cowboys, who were running on everybody ever since they played them, except they didn't even want to attempt it on Tampa. But, yeah, Mac Jones, really impressive. Hey, still some of the same themes we talked about. Hey, big plays, explosive plays, certainly one of the things that's hurting them altogether. But I thought that was like the hashtag as expected, kind of what I would thought as far as what New England's plan of attack was on the offensive side of the ball. You know, honestly, you know, in a lot of ways, and again, I'm impressed with what he did. You know, had the interception. Who had the other turnover we're missing? Oh, Jonathan Taylor on the fumble on the little swing pass to the right by the Patriots sideline. J.J. Taylor, sorry, not Jonathan Taylor. Yeah, that was a big moment. But all in all, yeah, I thought he executed well. And, of course, took a lot of hits too. I still think, you know, I was really impressed with the way Brady played. I really was. I know it wasn't pretty or anything like that.
I mean, that it really was coming down.
It was coming down.
You've had experience with a wet football.
Yeah.
That can't be fun.
No, it can't. But that's why Brady is, like, you know, to me, another thing that people overlook, to where I'd go, no, this is another reason Brady is better physically than people give him credit for. Playing up in New England all those years, bad weather, winter storms, whatever, he could throw missiles through it. It didn't matter. Oh, it's raining today. Oh, it's snowing. Oh, it's 40-mile-per-hour winds. No big deal. We'll still be able to throw the football.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, they're a team that they're not like the Patriots. They don't want to dink and dunk. That's not what they do. They are looking for 15, 20, 30-yard completions, like you see. I mean, look at the end of the game. There they are in a kind of like, oh, just get a few more yards, or, you know, make it an easier field goal, or maybe get the first down, and they're going for a 30-yard touchdown pass down the right sideline to Antonio Brown. But here's where I was impressed with, like, just Brady and the Bucs all together. First off, Brady never let the emotions of the game get to him, in the sense of, like, I got to make a play. I got to do something here. I got to show the whole world that, you know, it was me. I thought he, you know, played somewhat conservative and careful, knowing that, like, they're going to have a hard time moving the ball on our defense consistently all game long. And Tampa showed a patience that I wasn't sure they were going to be capable of showing. You know, I thought, like, the one way the Patriots might upset the Bucs is – you know, Arians and Leftwich just get bored. And, man, we can't get A.B. and Mike Evans deep down the field and make any big plays like that. And I thought maybe they would fall into the trap like we've seen them, where, like they did last week a little bit, not running the ball. We're just going to throw the ball every play, and we're going to make big plays that way. And I thought if they did that, that's where they could lose the football game. But, like, they kept it under wraps, and I think that was one of the more impressive things to me about the game.
30 carries, 119 yards. So they did have a strategy of not making Brady be the guy that had to win it. On the other hand, the Patriots, 8 carries for negative 1 yards.
Man, disappointing with the Patriots.
Fewest rush yards in franchise history. Yeah. Ariel Goldberg says, yo, Ahmed and Chris, the Patriots' O-line seems to be the weakest unit on the team. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's certainly like the most underwhelming unit on the football team, no doubt. I mean, I think between the injuries, you know, guys, especially the last 2 weeks, guys just not playing well. You know, I mean, yeah, I certainly did not expect this out of this unit, especially after, like, what we saw really, like, the last 2 years was very high-level play. Last year especially, where it was like they were an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks in a row.
To the point where you could say they were the best part.
I would have gone, their run blocking is as good as anybody in football. It's the best thing about their team. But that has not been able to get off the ground at all.
Why?
Certain guys, like,
you'd want
Trent Brown.
I mean, this is when you'd want it, right? Rookie quarterback, you figure, like, let's give him the benefit of the running game.
I think they're just simply not playing as well.
Yeah.
You know, Trent Brown being hurt. I'm going to mess up his name. Onwenu, you know, the guard from Michigan, who's typically one of their, like, better linemen. The last few weeks, he struggled and has not played good football. Isaiah Wynn has been inconsistent at left tackle. So that, I guess, that jumps out to me. And then I think the other thing that I just would add to that, Ahmed, is, you know, they don't scare people. with any of their deep plays like you talked about. It's short passing game. They have no weapon on the outside that people go like, oh, man, we got to worry about that. And Mac Jones isn't the type of, like, you know, got a cannon in his arm that scares you that way,
right,
at least yet. So I think it's all those factors kind of all playing together that have, made them a little underwhelming. More than underwhelming up front. I mean, disappointing so far.
Yeah, close though late. Mac Jones was able to persevere. And then Cam Lloyd-Jones says, ball on the 39, 56 seconds on the clock, 4th and 3, pouring rain, Brady waiting with 2 timeouts, kick or go for it. So Belichick kicked it, right? Missed the field goal. Long field goal. I was like, oh, man. Because it was
56 yards.
It was pouring at that time. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is a
terrible
hard
idea. All game.
Then he kicked it, and I was like, oh, wow, he's going to make it.
Yeah.
And he barely missed it off the upright. I guess if you look at the analytics of it, the Patriots had like a 37% chance of winning. And then when they attempted the kick, even before the result was known, it was like it already went down to 27%. But you know, like we always say, that doesn't take into effect the rain and a bunch of different factors, too.
No.
But did you think it was justifiable kicking that field goal for Belichick?
I certainly thought it was iffy. I mean, I was like, I did not expect it. I really didn't. When he came out, I was like, whoa, okay, they're going to go for it.
They were like career long.
They were confident in that. Yeah.
Chris on the broadcast, Collinsworth, was saying like, oh, and he's dealing with a bit of a injury to his plant leg.
Right.
And I was like, this is a disaster.
No, I know.
I made it.
For all those reasons, I did not expect it. I thought that they would probably try to get a few more yards just to make it a little easier nonetheless. But, man, it was close. Didn't lack drama, the game, altogether. And, you know, I think, you know, all in all, hey, even like New England lost, there's still a lot of positives about what they do in the football game. They're not a pushover. We know that. Their defense is the real deal. I mean, again, nobody's done that to the Buccaneers offense in a while. As far as like stymie them, make them get down in the red zone and kick field goals. Like, nobody does that to Tampa Bay. I mean, Brady, ever since he's been there, it's like you get around the 20, he's throwing touchdown passes.
Yeah.
They're getting in the end zone.
Yeah, there were a lot of yards in the first half.
Yes.
And not a lot of points.
No, not a lot
for
of points.
Tampa.
Exactly right.
Last thing on this, then we'll move on. The pass defense for the Bucs.
Yeah.
What are we thinking about that? You got Carlton Davis carted off. Richard Sherman was playing in this one, faced 8 targets, allowed 8 receptions, 98 yards. Is that still an Achilles heel for this team?
Definitely. I mean, Antoine Winfield got hurt, went into concussion protocol. Sean Murphy Bunting is, you know, out with that dislocated elbow that we saw in Week 1 against Dallas. So one of the, you know, the other kid, Jamel Dean, he's out. He got hurt last week in the Rams game. So definitely one of the weak spots. They're beat up on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
So they're going to have to kind of just weather the storm. It's not going to be the dominant Bucs defense that we saw towards the end of last year. No, not right now. You know, JPP not out there either as far as coming off the edge there. So, again, to me, it's for them right now, it's weather the storm, keep winning games, they'll put the pressure on the offense, and hopefully the defense gets healthy to where – you know, they get healthy at the right time of the year to make the playoff run or the last half of the year run.
And that's the decision that you have to make when you bring back a team. You pay a lot of money to get your starters back.
Yeah.
Is that you sacrifice some depth. And now they're dipping into that depth.
Definitely.
And it's going to be difficult for them.
No. So and now, can they contain themselves and not rush people back? They don't need to. They're too good. They should be able to win without it. So have the big picture of, like, the season on your mind, not just, like, the next week's opponent.
Thought the Bucs might have the best defense in the NFC. I don't know. It could be the two teams that played against each other in the NFC West. Cardinals defeat the Rams 37-20. I think this, for the Cardinals, was the most surprising thing that happened on Sunday for me. That they won the game, that was surprising to me. I didn't think they had a chance to win the game.
Right.
And the fact that they won the game fairly handily, I thought it was the most impressive thing I saw on Sunday.
I think so. I think it was the most shocking as well. You know, I think it's the style and the fashion in which they won the game that I think adds to, like, whoa, really? I mean, yeah, I didn't expect 37-20, obviously. I picked the Rams to win the football game. So I didn't expect that. But if you told me it unplayed that way, I would have been like, really? That's how it's going to unplay? Like, Kyler Murray, long drives, you know, 12-play drive, 17-play drive, him scrambling around, making throws, them running the ball, and then the Rams' offense kind of fucking things up. Yeah, I would not have expected that. You know, early on, it's 3-0. The Rams go down the field. They force the Cardinals into, I don't think, maybe it wasn't a 3-and-out. I can't remember all the specifics, but they punt. They get the ball back, and I'm going, uh-oh, Cardinals are in trouble. It's 3-0. Here we go. Rams got the ball somewhere near midfield. And Matt Stafford and Sean McVay, they dial up that play action pass where he kind of rolls to the right and tries to throw the post route back to the left to DeSean Jackson. Doesn't throw it out there far enough.
Yeah.
And our man Byron Murphy, who's like, I mean, the ball gets in his area code, he's catching it. He's one of those special DBs that has real crazy ball skills. But he gets that, and the game was never the same from that point on. Arizona went down the field, scored a touchdown, and really controlled the game from like from there on out, I felt like, for the most part. And that was impressive to me, was the sustained drives, the third downs, and then for a team that has contained Kyler Murray his whole career, they couldn't contain him yesterday. And yeah, Arizona, you know, showed their ass yesterday.
Yeah, I think we have some numbers on that. Kyler Murray's first four games versus the Rams. And in fact, Sean McVay was 8-0 versus the Cardinals coming into this game.
Right.
Lost for the first time here. So you see the first four games for Kyler against the Rams, not great. Yards, passing yards per game below 200. In this game, he goes 268 and two touchdowns, no interceptions. But I think the real good thing for the Cardinals is he didn't really go off. That's not like those numbers are not like a Kyler Murray won this game for us. It was a total team effort.
Total team effort. A lot of like, I feel like patience was the word of the day for me yesterday, where I just went, man, look at like not forcing a ball. Okay, you know, yeah, ugly first down. They got the first down, though. Move the chains. Clock's rolling. I mean, some of their drives, like here, I just want to go through it because mm-hmm. I know that you jumped out to me yesterday. But you got the six-play, 87-yard drive, their first touchdown, where it was, again, a third down. And this has been a thing you know with me with Kyler Murray is third downs. Where he kind of just floated to the right and found A.J. Green down the sideline. But then after that, it's an 11-play, 75-yard drive. Then it's a, okay, they get the turnover off the Sony Michel fumble, which was a real changing point in the game. Mm-hmm. And that cannot be underestimated. It's 14-10 Arizona. And Sony Michel, I believe, fumbles on the first play of the drive to set up the Cardinals, and they go in and get an easy score. But so then you got that play. So 5-play, 21-yard drive, right? They're up 21-10. Rams go get a field goal. And then they answer back with a 17-play, 70-yard drive for a field goal. And then a 10-play, 38-yard drive.
How do you do that? 17-play,
right? No, I know.
70-yard drive.
It's
and not score. Touchdown.
Just, it tells you that they're being patient. They were running the ball a little bit. He wasn't going to try to force the ball down the field against, you know, the Rams or hold the ball too long. So yeah, you do that, you know, and then. And then they have a 9-play, 64-yard drive to for their last touchdown, and then another 12-play, 94-yard drive.
Dang.
That's just stuff we have not seen the Rams defense do or give up. It's just let teams kind of just bleed them out that way. But Arizona made the most plays on the field. They controlled the line of scrimmage for the most part. Every got-to-have-it moment, as I sat there and was trying to watch all the games, I just went – Arizona made the play. It's just the way it was, and really impressive. Like, good for Arizona. Really is.
So our friends over at PointsBet say that Kyler Murray is now tied with Patrick Mahomes as the front runner in the MVP race at plus 550 odds there. So Kyler Murray putting himself in there. Arizona is the only team to score 30 or more points in every game this season. That's impressive.
Oh, well,
this offense is – I don't know if they're the best. I know you like the Cowboys offense.
Cowboys – I mean, the Raiders, I think, are probably the two best offenses for me in football right now.
Okay.
But dangerous-wise,
yep.
Danger is my middle name, is the Arizona's that team. Because Arizona, like, so I know what you mean. Like, you could say they're the best. I get that. But they can go through, like, a spell, too, in the first 2 weeks where they have, like, three or four drives where they don't do anything.
Right.
But all of a sudden, they're, like, kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs used to be. All of a sudden, they explode. And you're like, zoom, 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 zoom. Whoa, they didn't do anything for a quarter and a half, and now they scored 21 points in, like, 10 plays. That's where they're really amazing. And again, like, maybe they can be the best offense in football if they show the patience they did yesterday. I think really the fact that, like, Kingsbury was willing to kind of keep running the ball.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to let, like, the Rams' crazy coverages and, oh, you're just going to do a passing game against the Rams. Like, that's what the Rams want. And now Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd can just fly and rush after the quarterback. So from that standpoint, it was really impressive and – maybe the most exciting offense in the NFL. Maybe that's how we should say it.
Last thing.
Or if you want to say best, I'll bow down to your best. You think it's the best.
I don't know. They're in
dangerous.
The conversation.
They're in the conversation.
That's what you say when you don't want to go out on a limb. You go, they're one of.
Yeah.
They're in the conversation.
Maybe the most dangerous. We could say that. They can certainly be even higher up in the conversation in that department for me. I'd like to see them be able to more consistently run the ball. I guess just for me to say best offense.
Chase Edmonds
we'll
was
say.
Able to rip off a 54-yarder in this game.
He's special.
So maybe get him going a little bit more. But Matt Kelb says, damn okay, an early damn okay. We'll get to that section a little bit later on. He goes, damn okay, the Jags defense, the only team to stifle that Arizona offense that looks explosive against the Rams and everyone else. Last thing here, because I want to give credit to the Cardinals defense.
Please.
Because I didn't know that they could slow down that offensive attack from the Rams. It seemed like they focused on Cooper Kupp, who's been like the main dude.
Yep.
And he got the targets again, didn't get the receptions, and they slowed him down, and that was able to slow down the whole Rams defense.
Vance Joseph, they do some creative things on the defensive side of the ball. Definitely one of the first things on my list is kind of to watch this film back a little bit and just see what the Cardinals did schematically to mess with the Rams.
Yep.
But, you know, again, you know, the Rams, Cooper Kupp, they take their shots down the field and get big plays there. We get that. But really, he makes his living more than anything like, you know, 10, 15 yards over the middle. And we've talked about this a little bit before. Who's over the middle for Arizona? A bunch of super freaks.
Yep.
So from that standpoint, you know, that's where Arizona's interesting. The way they can play defense and their talent on that side of the ball really allows them to keep some weird personnel and do some different thing on the field because of the athleticism of those linebackers and then the two safeties they got to go along with it.
Nugget alert.
Nugget.
I've got a nugget. This is the fourth straight year in which an NFC West team is the last undefeated team in the conference with, get this, the most impressive part of that, it's been a different team each of the four seasons.
Right. Last year was Seattle. The year before it was
Rams.
No, the 49ers. Super Bowl year. And the year before that was the Rams.
How cool is that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
It really is. It's been all four. It's been the last undefeated team. So the Cardinals look awesome. Speaking of the NFC West, we'll stay there with the Seahawks getting a huge win on the road against the 49ers. A 49ers team that dominated the first half.
Like dominated.
Dominated the first
half. An ass whooping. The first quarter. The first quarter, if I can remember this right, and I'll pull it up here. I think it was like 170 yards to -3.
Yeah, I think it got up to like 190 or almost 200.
167 to -3, at least in the first quarter. That's insane.
In the first quarter.
In the first quarter. That was the end of the line. And you were only up 7-0, which to me is always like, danger, danger, danger. Yeah. When you don't take advantage of those moments of ass kicking and you're only up by a touchdown, especially against Russell Wilson, it's danger time.
So
dangerous.
This is from 233.5 Knowles. He gives a damn okay nomination for Russ Wilson, his TD to Freddie Swain. Way to stay elusive, throw a perfect ball on the move into a tight window. Pete notes that Russ went 4 of 5 for 76 yards and a touchdown on passes 10 or more yards down the air. So they were the 49ers defense had him under control in that first quarter. You knew at some point Russ would get cooking.
Yeah.
They got the short field on the muffed kickoff. And after that, the 49ers couldn't stop him enough and couldn't score enough on the offensive side.
No, I think you say it right. And they're such a big play team, like we've talked about Seattle. I mean, that's so that you dominate and you think, we got them. They're in a tough spot. But it's just, we know one thing about Seattle is at some point he is going to make some big throws to a Lockett or a Metcalf or Freddie Swain. The play, I mean, again, you know, you said it right. It's off the fumble, off the kick return, right? They've gone up 14-7. That play right there, I mean, come on. That was special as far as buying time, being whirled around, keep your balance, then throw a nice throw to the front right corner of the end zone. Yeah, really impressive, gutty win by the Seattle Seahawks. And it just it's their fortitude, their toughness, their mental toughness, how they just battle. And even when shit looks horrible, they just always have this, like, positive attitude. You know, that's what always impresses me about them. And that starts with Pete Carroll and then trickles to Russell Wilson and the rest of the group.
Yeah, Russell Wilson still now has not lost 3 straight games in the same season in his career. They were in danger of doing that in this game. And the 49ers, the strength of their team is the defense. And I think that they look good for most of this game. But the one thing they're not getting is turnovers. They're not getting the takeaways. They went into this game with just one, tied for the fewest in the NFL. They did not get one in this game.
No, and I don't, you know, really fast, sound defense. But, I guess not pressuring the quarterback quite to the extent I would have thought they would have this year. You know, whether that's Philadelphia 2 weeks ago or Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Again, I know they're around the quarterback a lot, but I thought they would be a little bit more dominant there. They did get the run game going a little bit yesterday, but I still don't think that's kind of like where it should be as far as talented as they are on the offensive line. And now, you know, we got the quarterback issue.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, it's Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt. You know, and of course, bad interception when they're kind of controlling the game. You're in a good spot. And he throws a ball, I believe it was like to Kittle over the middle, and doesn't see Diggs, the backside kind of lurking safety, and he undercuts it. And I felt like from that point on, the game was really never the same after that. Because like where were the 49ers on the field when he threw that interception? I want to say they were on like going on Seattle's side of the field, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'm wrong, Pete. Maybe you can look that up. But again, it was part of that process of where the 49ers are whooping that ass,
yeah.
And here they are kind of marching down the field. And he makes that mistake, and I, to me, again, I know I'm watching a lot of football. It felt like the game was never the same from that point on.
Aladdin Bust You writes in and says, my homies,
yep.
Firstly, when is Pete making an appearance on the pod? When's that going to happen?
We should just sit him right here. I don't know why we don't, actually.
And
make
so
him
he
sit
could
here.
Just chime in. And
right.
Because
so, like,
he's
hey,
in
Pete,
our ears.
Right.
He
so
should
Pete,
just do it in the microphone
when did,
right
when
here.
Did that interception happen? And he could sit there. I think we should. You have to get a shave. Nobody wants to see you shaved. You're not like, he goes, I have to get a shave. That's a lot. Like, he's like Brad Pitt or something, and people will turn it in for, like, the good looks.
Like, there's expectations
yeah,
that Pete's
like,
going to come
on.
In here
no,
looking
nobody.
Like a model or something like that.
Now I'm shattering his confidence, he says.
Okay, and then that wasn't all for Aladdin Bust You. Says, secondly, tell me you saw some good from Trey Lance after the slow start. So he's pleading with you, a 49ers fan pleading with you, please say that you saw something good
well,
from Trey Lance.
I go back to, like, what I say about him, I see high level wowness, so that always excites me. It does. When the ball pops out of his arm, I go, man, it's a lot of power. But I don't think, like, from what I saw yesterday, I don't think anything's changed me yet in the fact of, and we talked about this right before the podcast, like, the ball is still a little all over the place with him. And that's going to be the thing to watch for. It's a weird motion he has. He has some mechanical, technical flaws in the way he throws the football. You know, bottom line. But the one thing I will say with the 49ers and a team and an offense that I feel like is having a hard time creating big plays, this is where I think maybe he can really help the football team out. Like, okay, great. Whoa, you were a machine with Jimmy Garoppolo and you moved the ball and did all these things. Great, it was fucking 7-0 and he dominated for two quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. You know, that to me is not sustainable to win that way in the NFL. Where Trey Lance, yeah, you might have a drive where you go 3-and-out. Oh, he made a bad read and missed the throw. But, you know, I don't think you might not have as many empty yards at the end of the day. That's where I'm interested to see as this goes forward. Because it sounds like Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be out a few weeks. And now you give Shanahan a little time to, like, you know, a few more quarterback design runs. Okay, we got to push the envelope with this guy. He's our starter now. And I do think he'll open the field up in the fact that, you know, between the run, the normal run game, and then his arm, you know, again, I do think that can maybe make life easier on them. I'm interested to see what they look like this week with Trey Lance at quarterback. I am.
Yeah, congratulations. You get a full week of game planning, and you get to play the Arizona Cardinals defense.
Yeah, which is scary. It's just scary because you don't know. Arizona is one of those defenses that kind of like it's different week to week, and you don't know what you're going to get game plan wise. And if there is a team that is like built to stop running quarterbacks, it's the Arizona Cardinals. You know, with as fast as they are, they got an athletic front, those linebackers, again, like we talked about. So, you know, either way, inconsistent. I do see some wow. But I think if you take away the blown coverage by the Seattle Seahawks on the 75-yard touchdown,
right,
you'd go, okay, yeah, there was some good, but it was a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, that was half of his yards for the game. And then without that, he would have been below 50% throwing the ball. But it did happen, and so did some issues with the special teams. Robbie Gould was hurt, groin injury, so that hurt them as well. Didn't have the
field goal
game. So this game could have been completely different without those special teams
cannon
troubles.
Fumble and the kick return, right, like you said. Yeah.
So the 49ers can at least look at that and say, maybe that's a reason why we lost this game, which they did. Now, we've given you a couple previews of Damn Okay. Now we're really getting into the segment presented by Under Armour.
Damn, I'm okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes.
I'm okay.
The legal gambolizing.
Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn. Okay.
Do you find it unfortunate that one time in your life you said illegal gambolizing, and now we hear it every week on the pod?
Well, I've sent a lot more other things one time, too, that they could use on that meltdown, too. Anybody that tunes into PFT in the morning, I'm good for at least one jumble of the English language, or Simsism, as we call it, for sure. So I can handle it. It's okay.
Here, and here's a good thing. Pete has organized the damn okay to give a lot of love to some offensive lines out there, and I like that. You know, I don't know that I think we gave a lot of love to defensive players a couple weeks ago in the damn okay section.
Right.
So these are not not your quarterbacks, your wide receivers, your running backs that get all the love. Let's give some love to some offensive line, but I'm sure at the same time we'll also put some love on those skill position players around them, starting with the Dallas Cowboys defeating the Panthers 36-28. Neil Moe 2010. Nelly Moe 2010. Sorry, Nelly. Says, love your work all the way from South Africa.
Whoa, thank you.
Can we get a damn okay for that Cowboys offensive line and Zeke Elliott and the butt-whooping they gave the Panthers? Thanks, guys. And it really was the first time the Panthers defense looked beatable
this year. I mean, got the butt-whooped, period. I wouldn't have expected that. For them to have their way in the run game, I think that was surprising to me. It really was. Zeke Elliott, like, I couldn't be happier for the guy, really. I'm like, I had questions about him coming into the year. You know, losing weight, okay, car crash runner. He's going to try to lose weight to be a little bit faster. Is he going to lose his power and explosiveness? Damn, he looks good. He really does. I mean, he looks like Zeke Elliott from 3 years ago. He's quick. You know, you see ability to kind of like, it gets out in the open field. Yeah, he's not going to take a 60-yard touchdown to the house anymore, but he can rip off a 20 or 30-yard gain for sure. You know, but this is, to me, Ahmed, why I think they're the best offense in football, because they can impose their will on you in two different ways. Yeah, we have other offenses that are balanced, but like Dallas can literally go, no, like you want to play that? Like, fuck you. We're going to run the ball and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Oh, wait, you're going to play us like that? Okay, fuck you. We're going to throw the ball every play. Now you can't stop that either. That to me is where you get scary. And of course they make big plays behind that too. It's not empty yards like we just talked about with some other teams.
Right.
So really impressive that way. I mean, the offensive line pass protects well, and of course the run blocking really good. They have a nice diverse way of being creative. I do think this game was closer than people, the score will say. I know it was an 8-point game all in all.
Yeah.
But even when it got to like 36-14, you know, and I'm not going to be able to remember all the details. Dallas fumbled the ball in their own 20 or 30 yard, and the referee called it down, and it wasn't down. There was two or three calls early on that went against Carolina, and I'm going to have to go back and remember it. Just too many things.
Sure.
But Dalton Schultz caught a ball. He turned upfield. They called forward progress, right? As soon as he got touched, the ball was fumbled. They blew the call. That was a big moment in the game. There was another bad call, too, and I'm not going to be able to call it off the top of my head, to where I just went, yeah, listen, Dallas is the better team. I get that. But they got a break or two that kind of made that game look a little bit more misleading than it really was.
Sure, sure. But the fact is the Cowboys were able to put up a ton of points. 36 points, 245 rushing yards. Carolina had only allowed 30 points and 135 rushing yards in their first three games combined.
They've been dominant.
So this was a really good showing by the Cowboys offense here.
And then a splash of turnovers every week. They get one or two turnovers that give them one more, you know,
Trayvon
possession.
Trayvon Diggs, another couple interceptions. Got five now.
He's like the guy we just talked about in Arizona, Byron Murphy. It's just, when the ball gets near them, they're going to catch it. I mean, Trayvon Diggs obviously played a lot of catch with his brother Stephon growing up because they have tremendous ball skills.
Yeah.
And DBs usually don't have ball skills like that, but his are as good as it gets. And I think that's the impressive thing about Dallas. It's not a dominant defense, but, of course, it's sound. It's better. And
it is better. I mean, a lot better.
A lot better.
I mean, they were very, very Civ-like.
Yes,
Swiss
right.
Cheese-like.
And they make one or two plays every week. One or two plays every week that, you know, help give their team a big advantage.
Yeah, they had five sacks of Sam Darnold in total. Micah Parsons had four quarterback pressures himself. You know what I'm calling it? Dan Quinn?
Yeah.
Dan Quinn, medicine man.
Oh.
He fixed the defense
the medicine
there.
Man.
That's a reference that if we have any, you know, 50-year-old moms watching, they might get that. Do you know what that reference is?
I don't think I do.
That's an old show Dr. Quinn, yeah, medicine woman.
I remember that. I do remember that. Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes,
you're not the target demo of that joke.
You're showing your age there.
I don't know why. I remember that show. I remember it too. So yeah. Dan Quinn, medicine man.
Dan Quinn, medicine man.
He fixed the defense.
I'm all for that. He did fix the defense. Hey, at least they play with passion. They fly around, and they know what they're doing. I think so. That and with the scheme fitting the players, everything there is impressive. Again, another game I'll be excited to go back. Just look, Carolina looked like they were intent on going, we're not going to let you have big plays in the pass game. We're good enough up front that we'll be able to slow down your run game. And they learned a lesson there that if they play Dallas again, they can't play pass coverage all game long. Yeah. They're going to have to take some chances, get people down there in the box so they don't get beat up in the run game like they did.
And they did get beat up in the pass game sometimes. Amari Cooper had a 35-yard touchdown against C.J. Henderson,
the new acquisition,
which I was looking at the tape. I was like, I don't know if he played before that play or after that play, but he came in.
I did not expect to see him this week. But I like that addition to their football team either way, and yeah. I'll be interested just to see how he looks because they're going to need him to play some high-level football.
Right. Damn okay, Dallas offensive line. Damn okay to the Baltimore Ravens offensive line. They beat the Broncos 23-7. They bring in Lamar Jackson and the starters with 3 seconds left. After they get the interception in the end zone
right.
to keep the streak 43 games in a row of 100 yards or more in the rushing game, which ties an NFL record. And I do like that.
I don't have a problem with it.
What do you do? It's a meaningless record. You're bringing in Lamar Jackson. He could get hurt. I'm like, okay, what are the chances he gets hurt on that play? Probably like 1%, right? Or maybe even less than that. And it's not meaningless to them.
No, it wasn't. That's something to them. That's the point. It meant something to them. And it's not like so egregious and disrespectful that you're like, oh my gosh, how could you do this to another team? You have such bad sportsmanship. No, I mean, okay, it's not like the ideal situation, but yeah, I think you're right. It's again one of those things that I think John Harbaugh likes Greg Roman to have that on his list.
Yeah.
It shows something about the culture and the toughness of their football team a little bit.
This is who we are.
We're going to run for 100 yards every week, fucking like it or not. but as much as that stole the story of the show, once again, the Baltimore O-line deserves credit. Yes, they protected, Lamar Jackson to make throws down the field. But Lamar Jackson's right arm won the game. Lamar Jackson can throw the football. See, he can throw it, right? He can throw the ball, like, pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sick of that fucking narrative, as you know. But his ability to, make a few big throws and buy time in the pocket when, okay, I'm protected, no one's open, let me buy a little bit more time and make a throw that way. I think that's the thing that jumped out to me about the game more than anything as I looked at it.
Yeah, and one of the more impressive things about him having that time to throw is that the Ravens had some injuries on the offensive line. Denver tried to move around Von Miller to exploit it. Lamar too elusive at times, so that helps the offensive line. But you're right, the throwing ability of Lamar Jackson, underrated for a long time now, was able to hit on that huge impact play, Hollywood Brown, who made a bounce back after dropping some passes against the Lions.
Tougher catch than any of the ones he dropped last
49
week.
49-yard touchdown. I looked at that play, too.
Yeah.
It's like he ran a similar route to what Tyreek ran in their game, where he's, like, going down the middle of the field, makes a move like he's going to go to the flag, and then goes left to the post.
Right.
And the defender, the safety, it was Justin Simmons in this case, in this Baltimore game. I mean, he went from 2 yards of separation to, like, 14 yards of separation. It was, like, over. And, like, I don't know if Justin was, passing him off to another zone. I don't totally know there, but it was impressive to see how much separation Hollywood got.
Well, he can fly. And that's a situation that, Justin Simmons ain't built to be covering Hollywood Brown 50 yards down the football field. But I think you're exactly right. That's what it looked like. It was, like, one of those corner posts, right? Where, we've been selling this deep out, deep corner all game, and it's a play that I think it was a split safety defense. I need to see it again on film either way. But, even if it is a cover two defense, that backside safety, once he sees that little lean out, he's not thinking like, wait, I got to get back there because they might throw a post 65 yards across the field.
Right.
And that's really basically, he threw that about 60-something yards in the air with where he caught the ball. I think he was on his own 45, and he threw it about 5 or 6 yards deep in the end zone. But, hey, if they can dial up a few plays like that every week, to me, that's one of the things they need to do. They need to be a little bit of like, we're going to take a few shots here and there just to back people off their running game, back people off in general so they're not worrying. Because that's what Denver was doing yesterday, mm-hmm. at least it looked like to me. They were all over the Ravens' run game. Anytime I thought I saw Lamar really trying to keep the ball or the run game get going, there wasn't a whole lot there. I know it wasn't a bad day rushing, but it wasn't like, oh, there goes Lamar gashing him for 20 up the middle. You know, there goes this guy 15 yards off this edge. Oh, there goes Lamar again, 20 yards running that way. He didn't look like he could scramble a whole lot, or they could get the run game going to like what we're used to out of them.
Last thing, yeah. Teddy Bridgewater. Another Vikings 32nd round or 32nd overall.
32nd
pick.
Round, yeah.
Just like Lamar. He got hurt, concussion protocol. Drew Lock comes in, 12 of 21, 113 yards, an interception. Did you see anything from Drew Lock?
He looked okay. I mean, the interception was late, right? It was in a point where they had to kind of force the issue. You know, so I can't say that I can really like glean anything there, you know, specifically. Unfortunate that Teddy B got hurt. Would have liked to have seen, you know, him out there just to see if they could have, you know, kept the game a little closer. It's a tough situation for any quarterback to come in like that. Like, okay, we're 4 weeks in the season. You haven't taken reps with the first team offense, and now you got to play the Ravens defense. Never easy.
Right. Another defense that's never easy to play is the Pittsburgh Steelers, but the Green Bay Packers were able to do just enough against them despite missing arguably their two best offensive linemen in Bakhtiari and Jenkins. Rodgers pressured on just 7 of 39 dropbacks, 18%. The Green Bay Packers O-line and their victory over Pittsburgh gets our damn okay, Chris.
Yeah, well, they're good. Well, you know, again, like pressure and all that is a lot of different ways. Like, you know what? For a second, go back to Baltimore for 1 second here because Odafe Oweh, right? He was all over it. He never got any sacks last year at Penn State. Never got any sacks. College football is hard to get sacks. Everything's a fucking RPO, a read option, a quick throw, a screen. Doesn't mean anything. Here he is in the NFL, and he's all over the quarterback every week. All right, so now back to the point here. I'm sorry. I just had to give him a little love. I meant to show him some.
Good.
With, like, I'm going back to the word patience again. Because like we talked about with like the Bucks and the Cardinals, like Rodgers and Green Bay, you could tell from the get-go we're like, we're going to get the ball out of our hands quick. We're going to make high percentage throws. We're not going to let Pittsburgh's defense win this fucking game. And I'm going to hold the ball and get strip sack fumbled. Or we're going to dial up some play because we know we can hit the 60-yard bomb. And then, oh, TJ Watt hit me. I fumbled. Like they weren't going to do that. It was a game plan of run the ball, let's be a little ugly on offense, you know, 5-yard throw here, 6-yard throw here, we'll hit a, you know, we'll get a chunk every now and then. But I think they played the game the right way. You know, they really did. Showing, again, a toughness and a patience in their game to just go, no, we're good, we're sound. You know, Rodgers knew, like, don't let Pittsburgh defense get a turnover, get a short field. And Pittsburgh's offense is not that great, and they're going to have issues. Mm-hmm. And that's really how it played out once again for the Steelers and the Green Bay Packers.
They split the carries between A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones equally. 15 carries for Dillon, 81 yards. 15 carries for Jones, 48 yards. That's a good compliment.
Definitely.
Aaron Rodgers ran in a touchdown, which he outran Watt.
Watt was dead. Watt's still dealing with that groin, so he's probably not at full speed yet. Yeah, but, I mean, shit, Rodgers, hey, Rodgers in his prime. All right, Rodgers in his prime was probably a 4'5 guy, 4'5'9, 4'5'8.
15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, 15 or 20 years ago. He's probably can still get 4'7. I'll just still give him 4'7 and change right now at his age.
What he can do is he can still throw it on a dime, and he did that to Randall Cobb, which we've talked about in the past. I mean, still most of the attention for the Packers in the past game goes to Davante Adams.
Yeah.
But you wondered if eventually he's got to start developing another receiver.
Definitely.
Or at least make defenses think like someone else can hurt us.
Right.
And Randall Cobb did. Randall Cobb hurt him a couple times.
Yeah, the one, like the in cut, right? Which let's see, that made the 23-yard pass that made it 14-7.
Yep.
You know, which was, we'll get to it in a second. But what was great is, you know, Rodgers hung in the pocket and really stayed with the first read. Like, kind of dropped back, and it looked like they had Cobb on a kind of a deep cross, and then they had an in-cut behind him. So he's just going to read it across the field, right? And I think, you know, he got the look where he's like, wait, Cobb's going to be there. He kind of got back in the pocket. The pass protection that you mentioned, of course, was key. he kind of looked around like, okay, nobody's around me. I can wait for him to clear this backside safety or backside linebacker who was over there. And then he just threw a fucking piss missile, right? And Edmonds couldn't even make a play on it. Cobb scored a touchdown that way. Green Bay just – they execute. That's the one thing that – it might not always be huge plays. Like, might not be the sexiest offensive showing like we saw yesterday. But their execution just – first down, stay on. Oh, we're going to run the right play against the right defensive look always. I thought them playing Dillon yesterday was good. I mean, from the standpoint of, like, that's a big boy game. You got the Steelers. You know, you want to run the ball. The ground's a little wet. We want to control. Like, I don't think you want to send Aaron Jones in the middle of that defense and get him crushed a whole bunch of times in that game. They use it just right. Space runs, they gave Aaron Jones. Passing the ball, Aaron Jones. Between the tackles, Dillon. And I think that's going to help their team out as they go forward.
So things are looking pretty good, a lot better than they did week one for the Packers. Big Ben and the Steelers, they got problems. Bronson.
Yeah.
Paradis.
Yeah.
Paradise. Says, how much of the blame is put on Ben for the Steelers' offensive woes?
Well, a lot of it. A lot. He's not playing good. There's no other way around it. It's not like I don't look at the game and go, oh, man, it's really been like, you know, tough sledding every week. There's nobody open in the pass. Like, I hear people talk about, like, you know, lack of pass protection. Damn, his pass protection hasn't been that bad when I watch it. You know, even yesterday, he has a huge play in the game. It's 7-7. It's 7-7. You're the Steelers. You're not good on offense. Take care of the fucking football and play like a Strugglesville type game, right? That's what that's how they have to win.
Yeah.
But there he is in the pocket with one arm. He got his arm cocked up in the pocket like he's going to like pump and throw the ball. And he's got it like that with people all around him. And he's already had like 3.5 seconds to throw the ball. Like, so that to me goes back to like, he's not being realistic with himself and what he is anymore. And then, yeah, a lot of the problems are him. Certainly, he hasn't thrown the ball that well, and he has not made good decisions throwing the football in general. And, you know, I think, he's certainly, to me, one of the top culprits or the problem for that offense right now.
Always a little weird when the legendary quarterback reaches the end. Obviously, it's happening with Green Bay, except that Aaron Rodgers is still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right.
A little bit different situation in Pittsburgh right now. They got some things to figure out. Kansas City's got one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the NFL, and they defeat the Eagles 42-30. Patrick Mahomes, we got to give a damn okay to the offensive line there as well. Pressured on a season low, 12% of his dropbacks. And then what happened? Well, he and Tyreek Hill just torched the Eagles. I think we have the numbers on that, Kristen, here. Tyreek Hill, 11 catches, 186 yards, 3 touchdowns. Fifth career game with 3 touchdowns for Tyreek Hill. He's already got 5 of those.
That's amazing. It is. It was one of those where you're like, man, we don't have a plan for that guy today. We're just going to let him run around everywhere.
Maybe we're like, well, we did have a plan, and he was just too fast.
I mean, yeah. First off, I mean, it was very impressive offensive showing. As good as I've ever seen Kansas City run the football in the Andy Reid era. As good as I've ever seen it.
I mean, 200 total rushing yards.
Insane. Dominant up front. Dominant. And, you know, they showed, again, back to, like, what we talked about a little bit here, the theme of the day, patience on offense. Like, other than his stupid third down interception where, again, I mean, this is where I go back to Mahomes. I don't think he's 100% moving around. How many times are we going to see him throw an interception where he thinks he's got a little bit more room to throw the ball and somebody grabs his feet as he's doing it? And the ball, he's a step slow. I know that now, too. I've had people reach out to me. So breaking news, boop, 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 boop.
He's not totally right. What do you mean people
reach out to you? He's not totally. I've been told that this is a thing. His foot is not totally right. So I know that. Yes. Hmm. Right. People have heard me say it on TV and they go, you're on to something. You're right.
Will it be better
so,
this year?
I don't know. But it's definitely affecting him. Look at – other thing you got to do is, like, go back and watch him. He's not been good under pressure this year because he can't avoid it the same way. He's been the best pressure quarterback in football. I think this year right now he's one of the worst in football. Hmm. That says something. That's when you have a gear missing and then you can't maybe cock the ball and load up the way you want to, you can't make the throw maybe the way you want to either. But, all right, getting back to the point.
So give more credit to the offensive line because it's more vital this year than maybe ever.
Definitely, 100%. I think he's going to have to play within the pocket more. He's not going to be able to make that magic happen. Mm-hmm. But great job by them, just like we talked about last week. They're not going to get defenses to change how they play them until they can show they can go 8 plays 77 yards, 12 plays 83 yards, 8 plays 75 yards, 11 plays 75 yards, 11 plays 75 yards, 6 plays 65 yards. And the 6 plays 65-yard one was what? It's the end of the game, and the defense has gone, shit, we have to come up finally and start something. He gets to throw the deep pass to cut Tyreek for the touchdown on the little corner post play. Now, offense, they're going to have to do that the whole year because the defense sucks. I don't know what to say about Kansas City on defense. I don't know what's happened to them.
You don't want to give credit to Jalen Hurts here?
Jalen Hurts like did a lot of good things. Definitely do. But we've seen the Chiefs' defense suck in every game now.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, like, they'll get it together. They're just, you know, they're a little complicated, you know, and they'll start dominating up front. They can't do anything. They can't get off the field. They can't corral the quarterback. They can't make any plays defending the pass. I mean, it's every game. It's the same thing. So, Jalen Hurts did really good. I'm not trying to take away from that. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about Kansas City and a team that we're talking about. You're the best player in football. You're talking about Patrick Mahomes and a Super Bowl team. Like, can they really go to the freaking Super Bowl playing defense like that? I don't know if they can. I mean, this has gotten back to, like, a few years ago when Mahomes first took over the Sutton defense, where you're just like, they're horrible. Can they just make one stop today, and maybe they can win the game because the offense will just be that amazing?
Well, and they weren't great in the first half of their Super Bowl year too, but in the second half they more aggressive.
They came along, right? Yeah. Yes, they did. They changed. And, you know, last year they were good too. At the very least, in like big games and big moments like we've talked about before, Kansas City's defense shows up in those moments.
Yeah.
This year it's run the ball, throw the ball, whatever you want to do on them, you can do it.
Yeah, Hurts goes for 387 yards through the air, 47 on the ground, despite the offensive line being without four of their starters. And so they were able to do that with
so
a lot of
another
the backups
point.
On
right.
the defensive line. But the
right.
Chiefs did not punt all game, and maybe that's what they're going to have to do.
I think
moving
so.
Moving forward is
I
not
so.
Punt, score every single time that you don't have to worry about what you do on defense. Congrats also to Andy Reid, first NFL coach. Coach in NFL history to record 100-plus wins with multiple teams, got to do it against his old team.
That's really cool. Big Red, good for him. They don't come any cooler than Big Red. I mean, he really is. He doesn't, you know, probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for the great coach that he really is, or all-time great coach he is.
I mean, you can make the argument that he's better than Belichick. You really can. No. I know people will say, like, how can you make that argument? I was like, he's done it in two different places. He's proven he can do it with multiple different styles, multiple different quarterbacks.
Definitely.
I think you can make that argument that he's the best.
It is. I don't think I'd go that far, but it is special. It is special to your
Most
point.
Most people wouldn't go that far, but
no,
I think you can make
you
that.
Do. You push the limit.
I go that far.
Yeah.
I don't care what
You're
people
an
say
guy.
About
You're an
I'm
edge
an edge guy.
Guy.
I live on the edge. I don't swear,
no.
but I live on the edge.
No, you don't, but you drink that poison
but
right there.
But I drink
there,
energy drinks by the bucket full. We got to give props, even though I don't want to do this next one, to the Chicago Bears offensive line.
Yeah.
Bears beat my Lions 24-14. Got to give credit where credit is due. They had just 46 rush yards the week before against Cleveland, 9 sacks against my Lions. They go for 188 rushing yards, 1 sack. And Justin Fields looked so much better. I mean, like, that Justin Fields, on like, even though I don't like the Bears, I root for them to lose all the time, he was fun to watch in that
Definitely.
Game.
Definitely. Like, looked really good. They played a style of football that fit Justin Fields. You know, last week against the Browns, it looked like they just said, let's play the Andy Dalton offense and just throw Justin Fields in there. Like, okay, great, but that looked like shit. So the good thing was, you know, I just underneath center more. I think that's the first thing that jumped out to me. Underneath center, running the ball to Montgomery, the bootlegs, you know, it led to some play action passes down the football field. I mean, he did. He played really smooth. You know, I didn't see anything that I just went, oh, my gosh, like, he's out of control or bad mistakes. I mean, he looked like he controlled the ball for the most part all game long. And, you know, between, like, that's all they need in Chicago. They just need to run the ball a little bit. And then if they can have Justin Fields make two or three splash plays, You know, their defense is good enough to be a pain in the ass for anybody in football. Just like you saw yesterday. Like, the game is a little misleading. They're up 21-0, I know.
Yeah.
But it went 7-0 Chicago, and then Detroit drove right down the football field.
They drove a lot.
Right. All game, drove right down the football field.
Yeah.
And wait, that was when, hold on, let me figure this out. What did they do on the first drive to turn the ball over? Damn, it's going
to
kill
me.
Well,
they had five trips to the red zone. So they had a couple fourth downs and some turnovers on downs.
Maybe it was a fourth down turnover on downs. I can't remember.
Two fumbles, one on downs in the first three drives. So it was fumble and then the turnover on downs.
So
and then
first drive was the one where Jared Goff was talking still and the center snapped the ball right on third down.
That was the first one.
Right,
yeah.
That was the first drive. Okay, so I thought that was the second one. So they had that. And then, yes, the next drive, they drove all the way down there, and yet we're in the red zone, I believe, and didn't get a fourth down conversion. I feel like there was something else that even happened there, too.
I mean, the total yards in the game, Bears 373, Lions 348. And so between the 20s, Lions were elite.
Right.
They were elite between the 20s. And then once you got to the red zone.
The second drive was a strip sack fumble. Jared Goff had the ball and got hit from behind by Khalil Mack. Detroit continues to kind of move the ball. They just, seem to make some mistakes at some inopportune times. But Bears.
Yeah, and Darnell Mooney. He could be a guy that Justin Fields hooks up with here. He showed some wheels out there. So
he's a big play guy. He would fit perfectly for the style of football you'd want to play with Justin Fields. Let's run the ball. Let's run the ball. Let's run some play actions. Let's run some boots. Let's run a quarterback design run. Oh, wait, they're pressing up on us a little bit. Zoom, there goes Mooney, right? Mooney and Allen Robinson together, that should be a really great combination for the style of football they should play in Chicago. So we'll see if it continues. But at least I like the look of the offense, and it seemed like they played it the right way yesterday.
I mean, David Montgomery going down with a knee injury. Can they still run without him? That's going to be the question.
Did you see the injury?
I did not see it.
I didn't either.
No.
I've only saw him limping off the field.
I didn't see a whole lot of this game.
Yeah.
I think they think it's pretty serious, though.
Damn.
I know.
Yeah, that'd be a...
So Pete says they think he avoided the torn ACL.
Okay. So hopefully it's just a sprain of the other ligaments and things, and then maybe he can be back in 5 or 6 weeks, which would be huge.
Yep. Yep.
Damian Williams can still go. So he won't be a bad fill-in for sure. But I'm excited to see what the Bears do going forward and how they build off this Justin Fields offense play altogether. I would think this means it's over.
This is now
Justin Fields.
I would think. How would you? Not?
I don't know.
How would
I mean,
you not?
How how could you go back to Andy Dalton? I mean,
unless
unless it got really bad or ugly.
Unless
again.
All of a sudden he starts turning the ball over a ton and you just can't do anything. But I agree. It looks like the Bears have found something in Justin Fields, and he is really fun to watch. Now this podcast has reached the New York portion of the pod here, and it was a good time in New York.
Yeah.
Normally we get the local stations here in Connecticut, and so I'm watching Bruce. NBC New York, right?
Yeah.
Bruce Beck, right?
Bruce Beck, right.
Bruce Beck.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry. And every Sunday, it's just like, what's wrong? This is bad. We're sorry that you have to watch these two teams. And actually, they both played pretty well enough to win, both in overtime. We'll start with the Giants here. Andrew Thomas, he allowed an NFL-high 10 sacks last season as a rookie. Had a bad preseason this year, but has allowed 0 sacks, just 1 quarterback hit, on 166 pass block snaps this season. That is something that Pete threw in here. Wanted to give some love to Andrew Thomas. And Aru 811 says, Chris, you need a victory lap on this one. You had a feeling about the Giants that few others did.
I didn't pick them to win. I did say that
overall.
I thought they would lose. I picked 2017 Saints. I said I would not be shocked if this was one of those upset games, though. They match up well with the Saints. They do. I think the shock of the game and where I did not think they could actually pull it off is a little bit like where Pete's given love, first off. You know, the one thing that jumped out to me, ran the ball, okay, with decent effectiveness. But the real thing was when they had to throw the ball, they protected Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
You know, I did a little thing last night on our Peacock postgame show just to go hey, look at all these throws, first off. They were longer developing, down the field, outside the number type throws by Daniel Jones. A lot of 15-yard outs, 20-yard outs, post route down the middle, whole shot down the left sideline for a touchdown to Rudolph. But the one thing that jumped out to me as we were kind of building this tape was just to go, man, I mean, this Saints defensive line, who's been all over just about every quarterback they played, he had a lot of clean pockets. So that's really positive to see out of the Giants on that side of the ball. I think that, with Daniel Jones balling out, and, like, listen, again, everybody get off Daniel Jones. Like you said in the Thursday night game, he might have been the best player on the field against Washington. Daniel Jones is not the problem with the New York Giants. He is plenty good enough to win football games. It's the rest of the team needs to start coming along and matching him a little bit. That's for sure. And now you see Saquon. Saquon fired up his third rocket in his ass yesterday. He only had like 2.5 fire in.
All systems go
yesterday, which was amazing to see. So now you get a little bit big play element. You got some receivers that can stretch the field. You got Saquon with running or even just a short passing game to make some big plays. They could be a pain in the ass to defend as they go forward here.
Yeah, on that 54-yard touchdown by Saquon, he just blew past Lattimore.
Yeah.
I don't know what Lattimore was doing
peeking,
on that play.
Peeking at the slot receiver.
Okay.
He was thinking, and I want to say that might have been like, was it a third down on that play? Do you know? They were in an empty set, and it was Barkley outside, and I believe, I want to say maybe Kadarius Toney in the slot to the left, who's going to run a little slot out route, which the Giants run a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So Lattimore was probably looking at this going, all right, they won't throw to Saquon with me out here covering him.
Right.
Right? And he got a little ahead of it and tried to jump it. And Daniel Jones, again, great play by him just
great
to realize it and see it. And then, go gadget boosters. Oh, it was a first and 10 play. Okay.
First and 10.
Yeah,
Kristen, do we have the numbers for Daniel Jones here in the fourth quarter and overtime? 14 of 19. This is in the fourth quarter and overtime alone. 203 yards and a touchdown. He goes over 400 yards for the first time in his career. And I think he's putting himself in position not only to be a good starting quarterback, but like in your top 15. In your top 40 quarterback rankings.
Flirting with it. I hear you. I do. I think he's breached that part of the conversation for sure. I mean, again, he's super athletic. People don't really want to talk about it. You'd go, actually, Daniel Jones is one of the best running quarterbacks at football.
He's legit. His top end speed is as fast as any quarterback. I think Next Gen has confirmed that. Like on that long run, remember last year?
He tripped and fell. Right. He was like at 22 miles per hour.
I think it was the fastest that any quarterback ran last
year. Yeah, he can go. So, people don't want to give that credit, you know, because of, hey, I'm probably part of the reason because of the narrative of coming out in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a sexy, like throwing sidearm and all those kind of crazy plays. So people think it's boring.
A white quarterback from Duke who has a low-key personality, you're not going to think
of that. Yeah, right. He gets a little crapped on that way just for being a little bit more reserved and, let's just say, a nerd, right? I mean, that way. Hey, listen, my dad had to do the same thing in the New York area. Oh, this dumb guy from Kentucky, Morehead State. What? I mean, they took him to win the Super Bowl and play perfect in that game before they started going, yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's the way they can be around here. But damn, you know, defense, one of the big moments of the game was Jameis threw a deep pass. It got called back. They brought Taysom Hill in the game, and he threw a deep ball, and it got intercepted.
Hmm.
And when the Saints were kind of controlling the football game.
Yeah.
You know.
What do they want to be on offense?
I don't. Like, I think they're still trying to figure it out, too. I still think they're trying to figure it out, too. You know, Jameis wasn't bad yesterday. Certainly not. I mean, every time I looked at it, I went, damn, he's, you know, making good decisions, throwing the football the right way. But they've, like, been kind of hard. They can't create a lot of big plays on offense. That's been an issue for them.
Mm-hmm.
It really has. You know, they ran the ball well yesterday. But I think they ran the ball well, and the fact that the Giants also were like, all right, we're not going to let you take any deep shots down the field, do that. They put a lot of pressure on their front. But wait, this is what I want to get back to, last thing with the Giants before we go there.
Okay.
The Giants' offense, if they can continue to block that way, and then you talk about, like we talked about, Galladay and Saquon, and then you see John Ross take off for the deep post.
Mm-hmm.
And who the hell am I missing? And they got the rookie first rounder, Kadarius Toney, going yesterday. Like, there's weapons out there. And if they can just protect, open up a few holes in the run game, I really think their offense can be a pain in the ass and be a difference maker. And we'll see. Maybe it's going to go that way here soon. It certainly looks like things are kind of going in that direction.
Kenny Galladay was really good Kenny Golladay was good in this game. Late in this game, there were some key passes to him.
Definitely, where he won one-on-one matchups on the outside.
Yeah, Paulson Adebo was like all over him, still caught it.
Yeah.
He's a big dude, but still can get the ball, great ball skills. And
definitely.
So money well spent. At
your
least
Detroit
in that
Lion
game.
Guy.
I like him.
You should. He's a great all-around player. Great
former
all-around
Lions,
receiver.
I stick up for him all the time.
Yeah.
So Daniel Jones was very good in that game for one New York team. Zach Wilson, rookie quarterback, very good for the Jets in their overtime victory over the Titans. Big time win, 27-24. Zach Wilson had been sacked four or more times in each of his first three games, just once yesterday. As we take a look here, what he did in this week as opposed to the other weeks, he was so much better. Zero touchdowns, six interceptions his previous two games. He had two touchdowns, one interception. I will say this, there were times late in that game where if Zach Wilson would have hit a relatively easy throw, it would have been over.
No doubt. He missed some.
He missed
sure.
some throws late.
He
but
did.
He also hit some.
Yeah, he did. There was one, I think, what, down in the red area maybe that we're thinking about where
there
he had a
one
guy.
One in overtime, one in end of regulation, where it was both of them. Was like one could have gotten a first down and kind of iced the game away in regulation, I think.
Right.
And there was one, the overtime where they probably would have scored a touchdown.
Right, he had the ball out to the right flat, and he missed it, right? Yeah. It was wide open. He definitely choked that one off, for sure. But, like, I think here's the big thing that I take away from Zach Wilson's performance. He stopped trying to be Johnny Robot in the pocket quarterback.
Hmm.
You're too fucking athletic to be sitting there all game long. Like, he got out of the pocket and made some plays that way. He played football yesterday. I think that's the thing that jumped out to me more than anything. Like, again, we've talked about this with Daniel Jones in the past and other rookie quarterbacks. You know, they try to, hey, coach said they want me to sit in the pocket and go 1, 2, to 3. And you start to be such a pleaser and you start to go, wait, I have faith in the offense. I want to give the plays a chance. And you start to lose, like, your natural why you were the number two pick was, like, when shit wasn't perfect, you can make unbelievable plays, escaping the pocket, moving around the pocket, making throws that way.
Right.
I think that was the thing that jumped out to me more than anything. Yeah, he still had some mistakes. You know, definitely had the one interception that was dumb. You know, he predetermined. You know, it was a play. Actually, the play he throws the interception on, this could be a cool play for What the Fuck Happened Wednesday, is the same play I believe Rodgers threw the touchdown pass to Randall Cobb. Rodgers waited for him to clear, right, instead of going to the second guy. Wilson, if anybody watches this play, the first guy going through is open. Just hit him. But he somehow made up his mind he was going to go to the second guy. He never gave it a chance. And the Titan defender, like, ran the route for Corey Davis on that play. There was a few plays yesterday where the Titan defenders ran the routes for the Jets guys where I wanted to go, they might need to self-scout thyself, because this is a few times I've seen this over the last few weeks. Like, the Patriots game the same way where I go, I think you might have some tells in your formations and what routes are going to be in run because people are all over them. Same with the protection we talked about. But either way, great job by Zach Wilson. And you can just see, again, game not perfect and all that, but I think you could see, anybody who's just watching football could see, like, again, it's about the look. The guy has some special qualities about him.
Yep.
Just like we saw from Trevor Lawrence on Thursday night. I know it didn't translate to a win for him, but either way, there's things they can do where you go, wow, that's kind of awesome. Like, oh, you're just going to roll to the right from your own 45-yard line and just tell the guy to go deeper. Go deeper. I'm on the run. You're not open, but I'll just flick it out there 60 yards on the run, and we'll throw a touchdown. I mean, that's special stuff right there. That was pretty cool to see.
Corey Davis stepped up versus his former team, 111 yards, one touchdown. They probably wish they had him. They definitely wish they had him because they didn't have A.J. Brown, didn't have Julio Jones, both dealing with hamstring injuries. So that was going to make things harder for Ryan Tannehill and company, who Ryan Tannehill, by the way, looks way less mobile. You talk about Patrick Mahomes being like,
he's gotten in the trap of trying to stay in the pocket too. Like,
yeah, and it's collapsing on him and he's not getting
He's just
out.
Not doing anything. Right. He's just sitting there trying to have faith in the offense. And a day like yesterday, and again, the Jets defense, you say what you want. I know it wasn't perfect. Like, and I know that, you know, the Tennessee moved the ball. The Jets defense fights and plays hard every week. I mean, they were all over Tannehill a lot in the pocket, you know, in some big moments getting pressure.
The Williams wall, the new Williams wall. Quincy and Quinn and Williams.
The brothers.
Became the first pair of brothers to have sacks in the same game for the same team since sacks became an official stat in 1982.
I mean, listen, if they had Jared Davis and they had Shaq Lawson and they had LaMarcus Joyner healthy, and I'm missing somebody else, I'd go, man, that Jets defense would be a pain in the ass, a real pain in the ass. But good for them. They fought every game. That was cool to see. That wasn't easy. They really overcame some tough circumstances to get that victory yesterday.
Concern for the Titans, for sure. Probably a little different if they have A.J. and Julio. That's a tough, it's tough to miss your two top receivers.
Definitely. But yeah, they had to make do with you know, backs out of the backfield, trying to stay probably even overly patient in the run game to where they didn't. They were probably like, damn, we're going to run the ball into this look. Okay, let's just give it. I mean, Derrick Henry was still a beast yesterday. That's always impressive. But, yeah, they couldn't create a lot of big plays. Everything was a long drive or a struggle, it seemed like, for the most part.
Yep, so hopefully they can get those guys back on the field and get that offense going once again. Now it is time for Give Me the Headlines, presented by Hyundai. And this is Pete, give me the headlines in my ear, because I perhaps have forgotten them. This is this is one of my favorite parts of the podcast.
I know this is
now.
One of your favorites.
You're like,
yes,
Pete, you go, Pete, what did I say again for this one? And so that'll be for all four of them. So Pete's ready to go here. We got four games to get through. Browns versus the Vikings, 14-7. And this was Kevin Stefanski against his former team.
The pupil has become the master.
Oh, there's your headline.
Oh, boom, man. Next level stuff right there.
Although it wasn't necessarily a masterful performance from Cleveland, but it was good enough to get the win.
No, I think what it was, you know, we saw a game where two coaching staffs who had great knowledge of each other knew the next move each team was trying to make. I mean, really couldn't get anything going altogether. The difference being, I think, really ultimately just like, hey, Cleveland's just more talented, period. Yeah. I think that's where I would look at it more than anything. Made a few more plays, but their two-headed monster at running back, you know, and their defense just every week seems to be getting better and better. And ever since that first week showing against Kansas City, it's been pretty damn good. But, you know, their ability just to impose their will with the two guys at running back, it is special. And they needed it yesterday. Yep. Because I'll say this, for the second week in a row, Baker Mayfield did not play well or throw the ball well. No way. He has thrown the ball as badly as I've seen him throw it in two games, really maybe since like his rookie year or some of those struggles in second year with Freddie Kitchens.
He has a mental block with Odell Beckham.
I think so. There's something there. Last week, Odell was open way more than what he got. And like first week against the Bears, I mean, I think he had like 6 for 75 or something like that.
Yeah.
It should have been like 10 for 170. Yesterday, you know, again, I like to go back and watch the film, but there was definitely two or three throws. One of them, which was a wide open 60-yard touchdown, and Baker Odell couldn't even get a hand on it. I mean, we're talking about Odell Beckham Jr. is like the greatest adjuster to the football in the history of the planet. Mm-hmm. Couldn't even do it. This is the weirdest thing. I haven't seen anything like it since Jameis Winston to DeSean Jackson with Tampa a few years ago, where DeSean Jackson was probably open for like 10 touchdowns and 700 yards of receiving during the year, Jameis Winston could not hit him. There's something about the body language, the explosiveness of how the guys come out of the cuts that Baker's having a hard time reading, and he just cannot connect with the guy. It's unreal.
Lucky for them is that they have a defense that has stepped up big time.
I
mean, that huge performance against Chicago last week, and then a big one here. Graham Bailey says, you got to take a victory lap for JOK. He looks special. Has his inclusion in the Browns defense in recent weeks propelled them to the next level.
Yes. You know, it's a little bit like we talked about with, like, the Cardinals. It's just like, you know, not to that extent, but when you got an athlete like that at the second level – you know, what they have a great advantage of is, like, if you get in a passing formation, they're like, okay, he can play middle linebacker, or we can kind of put him out at nickel. And, yeah, they're in a passing formation, but we're kind of still with a decent run defense. Or you want to throw wide receiver screens, he's going to blow that up. And then, of course, when you get back into, like, base looks, he's a great, you know, stand-up linebacker. He's all over the place. He's unbelievable. He's like, he's just a guy, when you turn on the film, you just go, the speed, the aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. When he sees a hole in the run game, he runs through it quicker than the running backs. And, yeah, he has taken that defense to another level.
Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah fell into the Browns' lap in the second round, too.
Amazing,
fell in the draft. And
amazing.
Big part of that defense now. Bills defeat the Texans 40-0. Huge blowout. Give me the headline.
Would you say this was a double entendre when I talked about
double
this?
Double entendre, yeah.
Bills blank the Texans.
Uh-huh.
As in they blanked them on the score.
Yeah.
And then you could also put a blank word there for, like, the Bills.
Blanked up.
Blanked up. Fucked up the Texans. The right. Bills killed the Texans.
Yeah, now so, we actually do have to
now
put
we
a
have
blank,
to actually blank that.
Blank
we have to
in there.
Blank,
okay.
blank,
sorry,
blank.
Kristen.
Yeah, sorry, Kristen.
Buffalo, second shutout in four games. Deluded Gooner says, damn, okay, are the Bills the best team in the league?
I think I would say they're the best team. I'm going to say they're the best team in the AFC. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the league's concerned, you know, they're in the running with them, the Cardinals, Tampa Bay, the Rams. They're in that elite class, I think, yes. You know, especially, you know, I know I've said this the last few weeks, but I think it's the way they're beating people that I think is the most impressive. Just defense, running the ball, you know, a few splash plays from Josh Allen. But it's not like what we saw last year where you went, is it realistic? Can they really drop back 42 times a game and just think Josh Allen's going to make magic every week and go 13-3 or 13-4 or something like that? No, it's not. And they're showing you, like, hey, we got other ways to do it. I mean, the defense was amazing yesterday. I don't – there was at a – you know, other than like maybe the first drive of the game or so, I never felt like Houston had a chance to move the ball.
Yeah.
They had the ball in some good field position early on in the game. You know, I think off the Josh Allen interception maybe it was early or just some field position. And they were kind of down on Buffalo's side of the football field. And they couldn't do anything. They couldn't do anything. And I think that's what's amazing. I mean, they're whooping ass at the line of scrimmage. They got great schemes on the back end and creativity that way. And then with the offense, like, again, just showing some run game and Allen, you know, him making a few plays running and then just a few laser beams. I mean, yeah, they're definitely one of the best teams in football, no doubt. And I don't think their offense, like I said last week, is still hitting on all cylinders.
And there were people during draft season that wanted you to talk more about Davis Mills out of Stanford. You were kind of reluctant to do that. Maybe now we kind of see why.
Well,
tough situation.
Well, it is a tough situation. They're not a great team. We know that too. But I think the one thing you can, like, maybe look at from Davis Mills, whether it be, you know, the Thursday night game against the Carolina Panthers or yesterday, just there's just not a lot of high end talent. Mm-hmm. He can maybe be a starter in the football and NFL, but he's going to need a team and a system around him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be able to, like, cover holes on your offense or carry the team when things are not going good. That's not what he is, and that's where, you know, I thought he was a little different than the other top quarterbacks in the draft.
Yep. There was a very interesting quarterback playing for the Washington football team. His name is Taylor Heinicke, brought Washington back. They beat the Falcons 34-30. Your headline for that game is?
Oh, something in the hiney. What was this, Pete? Showing your hiney? Saving their hiney. Saving their Heinicke.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Or
that might
showing
be your best
their Heinicke.
The delivery was not the best, but that might be your best one.
My delivery, is it ever good? I mean, come on. I mean, seriously.
Taylor Heinicke, like, that type of player might be my favorite, like, archetype of a player in the NFL. It's like a quarterback who's undrafted or drafted late, not a ton of athletic ability, but enough to, like, move around the pocket, undersized, make stuff happen, kind of like Doug Flutie.
It's a scrapper.
Scrapper, kind of a quarterback.
Right.
That's my favorite, like, Taylor Heinicke is that.
Scrapper who seems to have, like, a really, you know, just a common coolness about in the clutch. I think that's the biggest thing, right? Because, listen, like, he has moments of being underwhelming in the first three quarters sometimes where I go, oh, man, he should have hit that throw. Or, man, he checked the ball down too quickly and there was somebody open downfield. He shouldn't have done that. But, you know, he never lets his team kind of get out of the game. And there he is late in the ball game with two really clutch drives to win the football game. And a lot of those clutch drives and those two clutch drives and plays, I mean, were him, making some high-level throws, buying some time. I mean, come on, the last touchdown where he scrambles the left and throws to J.D. McKissic,
yep.
I mean, that was special. I mean, not special, but it was really cool. I mean, the fact that he had the wherewithal to go to the left and go, wait, where's my back? Oh, he's over there. And then see it, because that's a dangerous throw to make because you don't know who's around the running back.
Mm-hmm.
Really awesome by him. I mean, I'm still really disappointed by the Washington defense.
Well, that
I mean, they sucky-ducky.
Florian Grossberg says, self-scout thyself. Washington defense giving up 30 points a game. Maybe they need to self-scout this.
Yeah, they do. We've talked about it. D-line has not been dominant in any game
so
far.
How is that possible?
Like, I don't
know.
That
was the one part of the team where I was like, all right, we know their defensive line is going to give teams problems.
I think the first thing is they're a little too bland on the defensive side. Like, they got to be a little bit more creative. They're not giving teams anything to think about. So, like, basically offensive lines are being like, okay, like, we're going to have this. We know it's going to be just those four guys. We're told all week how awesome they are, so we better play really good. And they can have kind of a plan of attack where, like, I don't see any diversity in the scheme. I never see anything that make, like, ooh, look at that defense alignment there. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the other top defenses in football, whether it's the Cardinals, the Rams, whoever, you're just talking about top teams, they get in some defense alignments on second and third down sometimes. And I go, wait, I don't know what the fuck you call this. There's three linemen over here. There's two linebackers standing on the line of scrimmage over there. Yeah. And then there's a defense end outside of them. They just are very bland that way. And I know I brought this up a little last week. Like, I think they got to start being a little bit more creative on that side of the ball just to jumpstart things, make defenses think a little bit until they find their groove, and then maybe they can go back to the vanilla, you know, type of style they play on that side of the ball.
They got the win despite that, a lackluster effort, another one from the defensive side of the ball. Another team that really needed a win that got it. The Indianapolis Colts beat the Dolphins 27-17. Your headline there is
fish out of water.
Oh, yeah.
Fish out of water.
Dolphins don't look – this is not great for the Dolphins.
No, I mean, the horses always have advantages over fish or dolphins out of water, always.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
it's where you play the game.
It's like a road game for the Dolphins.
Yeah, you put
tough.
The horse in water, going to have a hard time.
Yeah, right. Dolphins got the advantage, right. I mean, Flipper's going to be all over the place, and that horse is going to lose, but not on land. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, grass field. Yes. Great win for the Colts.
They needed it.
They did need it.
Hard schedule. They're not as bad as they've looked, probably.
Exactly,
it's been
right.
A very difficult schedule.
Very difficult schedule. I mean, really, you know, had a chance to beat the Rams. They've messed some things up. They're dealing with injuries. I think Carson Wentz played a pretty clean football game. I do think 2 weeks in a row, I've seen him be like a little bit more careful with his body, which is impressive. And then if they can get, like they did yesterday, Jonathan Taylor running the ball the way he did, like, they could climb back in this thing and make things interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, they're only one game behind the Tennessee Titans now in their division,
right?
So here we go. You know, Tennessee dropped the ball against the Jets, and now the Colts got a chance. And, you know, the Colts defense is solid. I do think Wentz will continue to get better and better. And, you know, to run the ball on that Dolphins D like that, I mean, the Dolphins defense is really damn good. I hope everybody knows that. Don't look at the stats or what they are, because their offense sucks. That's what's out of water right now. I mean, that's where they're suffocating. They just can't sustain any offense at all. Pass game, run game, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. And, good for the Colts, good for Carson Wentz kind of getting everybody off his back for a little bit.
Yeah, and Michael Pittman becoming a little bit of a combo with Carson Wentz. I think there were four of his six receptions came on third down, so he's looking for him in big-time situations. So big win for the Colts. Congratulations to them. That was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. That was good. You didn't have you relied on Pete just like two times. It was like only a couple
good.
Times.
I kind of remembered it.
You knew a couple there.
Not bad for like a guy who went to bed at 3 a.m. and
I know.
Got up. And
you're doing the Peacock show with Catherine, which I watch every time.
Thanks.
And I couldn't sleep after it either. Yep. I don't know if I was just pumped up. Adele
got you
all
excited,
pumped up,
huh?
From the game before. But we talked about it at the beginning of the pod here, the umbrella situation with Rodney Harrison made waves everywhere.
Right.
We have done some research, and here it is. There's a new Twitter account, by the way, Umbrella Hand on Twitter, if you want to follow them. Rodney Harrison's Umbrella Hand. We found out that we found out who the hand was.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
What person?
Pete did some digging.
It wasn't Matt Casey, was it?
It was not Matt Casey.
Darn it.
Special thanks to our runner in Foxborough, Sydney, who I know well, see her a lot. Sydney, the person holding Rodney's umbrella.
I should have figured it was her. She's always babysitting Rodney on the road. It's always. She's awesome though. She really is.
Yes.
So that was her that was stuck there holding that. What a great way to make your debut on national TV.
You know,
hey mom, my left hand was on TV all day tonight.
And I hope she either had a hoodie or someone was holding an umbrella for her. You know, I think that would make me feel better about the whole situation.
I hope he tipped her and gave her like a few hundred dollars. That's what he should have done. I mean, geez. Yeah.
Knowing Rodney, he made it okay.
Pampered athlete. Can't hide money.
We all like Rodney. We just do it out of the kindness of our heart. We know Rodney would have our back in a similar situation, even though he was not doing it for anyone else.
Would not hold an umbrella for any of us. But if stuff got real and like somebody wanted to fight one of us or something like that, that's when Rodney's going to have our back. And he'll be like, what? You want to mess with my friend? Then I'm going to mess with you. Yeah. And that's where Rodney's awesome.
Exactly.
He's kind of that guy he's like a pit bull. That's what I look at Rodney and I think of a pit bull. Like, if you let him off leash, you better watch out. He might go a little crazy on you. You got to watch out.
He'll crush you. He'll humiliate you. But if someone wants to fight you and you're on his side,
he's
got your back.
He's going to protect you. No doubt about it. No doubt.
Okay, we're trying to get you out of here at 12:35, which we've almost done to the minute here. Final thing.
Yeah.
Do you have a pick for Raiders and Chargers? Great Monday night game.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Raiders. I am. The Raiders, you know, as you heard me say earlier in this podcast, I think they're you know, one of the best, if not the best offense in football. Yeah. They have answers for everything. And when I say answers for everything and people think like, whatever the blitz is, whatever the defensive front, John Gruden has programmed Derek Carr to get into the right play every time. So between that, and I think what scares me, you know, and again, I know the Chargers will make their handful of plays on the offensive side of the ball tonight, too. But I think the other thing, too, that I look at in this game, I would think the Raiders are going to be able to run the ball on this Chargers defense. Chargers have run defense issues. And I do think the Raiders have kind of got that going. They got it going last week. I don't know if Josh Jacobs will play tonight, but Peyton Barber was really good. I know Josh Jacobs has limited practice this week, but, yeah, I expect like a close victory for the Raiders tonight.
All right, Raiders and Cardinals, the only two remaining undefeated teams in the NFL. If the Raiders go down, then the Cardinals stand alone. You're back on Wednesday with Paul.
Yep, back on Wednesday for What the Fuck Happened Wednesdays. We'll break down some plays. Please send in anything you want to talk about, whatever you think's worthy of breaking down. Please send in the questions, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. You know how to do it. Everybody enjoy Monday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for driving the ship.
Yep.
You the man. I like you a lot. Okay. And your red pants are really cute today. Yeah, way to go.
They really pop.
All right.
They
everybody check back in Wednesday. We'll see you. Have a good start to your week. Clap it up.
Clap it up.